Lifestyle. Selena McKenzie.
We're going over to Hong Kong now. Our first guest was once trapped in a violent marriage and firmly believes that some women are simply addicted to abusive men. To tell us why she thinks this and a little about her story, please welcome Vivian McGrath. It sounds amazingly clear considering you're in Hong Kong.
Oh, that's good. I'm very pleased.
Yeah, you could just be round the corner.
I can hear you perfectly.
Good. Excellent. Okay, so a bit about your own personal experience. When and how did you meet your now ex-husband?
I met him at a party. We were both actors, and we had the same agent, and it was an agency party. And there he was standing in a corner on his own, nursing a drink and looking absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. And I was completely... he took my breath away, I suppose you'd say. And he looked up with his very... he was very classically tall, dark and handsome with piercingly blue eyes. And he looked up and looked at me. And it was just... It was magnetic. Mm. And we started talking and we ended up talking the entire night. So that's really where I met him.
It's exactly what all of us would do. You get this connection and you're attracted to him, he's attracted to you. Why wouldn't you go for it?
Yeah, it's a really, it's an interesting dynamic because a lot of people I've talked to who've been in abusive relationships say the same thing, that when they first meet, it's incredibly charismatic, it's intoxicating. The sexual chemistry is very powerful. And, it was a party that was full of beautiful models and well-known actors. And it was like he focused his undivided attention on me. And that's quite a powerful thing when you're young. And I was probably a pretty insecure girl, I'd have to admit now. And that's a really powerful thing and a really nice feeling when somebody just focuses all that attention on you.
Yeah, you were only about 18, I think, at the time, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
So how long before you started to notice that things were not quite so perfect?
Well, it was, I think, probably pretty early on, within even a matter of weeks. It was subtle, you know. Suddenly he'd get something upset about something and there'd be a disproportionate reaction and poof. We're in this argument that I'm thinking, how on earth has that happened? And then the phone is slammed down and then I don't hear from him for a week. You know, this was back in the days where there was no internet, no email, no SMS, no mobile phones. Mm. And so I'd be left wondering, what on earth have I done wrong? And then he'd come back and it was charming, Mr. Charming again, and everything was wonderful. He was, you know... delighted to see me, and I was the only woman for him. And so you just think, oh, well, was I imagining that? And so it starts very subtly, and then it just gradually builds up to, you know, being told he doesn't like what you're wearing and very controlling behavior about, you know, telling you what to wear and if you look slutty or not, and if he doesn't like someone, it's very clear he doesn't want you to hang around with them, and you start being isolated from your friends and family. It's a slow drip by drip by drip. I think probably the signs were there very early on, but you just, you override them with your brain, you ignore them. The warning signals are sort of there, but you just ignore them.
Do you think it's a manipulated plan to be like that, to do it slowly but surely, or do you think that's just the way these men are?
I think it's just the way they are. I mean, I think that narcissistic behaviour, I don't think there's any self-awareness. I don't think they are aware of what they're doing. It's just about, I think it's deep-seated insecurity, and that manifests itself in a need to control, a need to feel like they're the powerful one in the relationship. But I don't think there's any self-awareness or any plan. I think what they're very good at, though, is spotting someone who is vulnerable and has low self-esteem and insecurity. I think they're very good at detecting that.
Yes.
And finding someone who will ignore those warning signs, because there's a lot of women and men with abusive women who would have run a mile, who thought, you know what, this is too complicated. And so I think, you know, in a way, it's two insecure people whose baggage sort of matches each other in a weird way.
Yeah, you've just actually answered my next two questions. I was going to say, do you think that he purposely picked you for that reason? And the second one is, and I believe me, I'm only playing devil's advocate here, why did you just say, well, no, I'm not wearing that dress just because you want me to? Was it because you were quite insecure yourself?
I didn't think I was at the time. You know, I was a very confident, popular girl. I'd had a very lovely, you know, privileged middle-class childhood with no abuse or violence or anything like that. So I thought I was very secure. I look back now and realise that I wasn't. It's really difficult to say. I think that you're just trying to keep the peace. You sort of, I think what it is it's almost like an emotional bait and switch. You meet this person who just sweeps you off your feet. You're love bombed. You're told you're the only person for them and need you and you're wonderful. And then when you start getting the glimmers of the other side, it gets excused away very quickly. And, you know, because at first it's very subtle, you think, oh, okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Like they say, oh, look, I've had a difficult path. And you feel a bit sorry for them because you think, well, I didn't, you know, that, you know, I feel sorry for him. And, you know, maybe I am the one for him. Maybe I can save this guy who's had a really rough time all his life. And so you sort of go into this rescue mode and being needed by them. And I must have had a deep-seated need to be needed because it felt great, you know, it felt good. And I think probably it then filled that low self-esteem in me to feel so needed and so wanted and so important in that person's life. But, of course, it doesn't stay like that. And as the highs get higher and the lows get lower and, it gradually, you know, the first push and shove comes in, and then the first sign of violence, and you know it's a cycle that gets worse and worse as you go. And why I say it's like an addiction is because you've had that massive high at the beginning, and you're forever searching for it again.
Yeah.
And you can never get the high that you got when they first came into your life, and you're really desperately searching for it. And as soon as you've had a bit of that first taste of violence, immediately the remorse, the tears, the flowers, the gifts, the I'm so sorry, this is not me, I need you more than ever to change me and make me not like that comes back, and you get sucked back in again.
Yeah. And then
you think, oh, I'm in their sunshine again and I've got that high again. So, you know, it is like an addiction in a way.
I think I understand that. And if somebody maybe gets physical once, well, there's no excuse. If they are very sorry, you can think, well, it was a one-off. But when it kept happening again and again, why did you not leave then?
I think what happens is it's almost like a weird form of grooming, and in that you're gradually stripped of all your self-esteem. And when you start to get told that you're stupid, it's your fault. And I know I know it sounds insane. I really understand how insane it sounds. But when you're in this vortex, and the cycle of high and low and high and low happens over and over again. Each time you have that, your self-esteem is stripped that little bit more to the point where you're terrified. You're full of shame. You don't want to tell people what's going on. You're in a way in denial, because denial is an incredibly powerful thing. You start to deny it's as bad as you think it is, and you also start to convince yourself, if I change my behavior, if I just do this or that, then the violence will stop. And so you're trying desperately to manage a situation that's unmanageable. And the only way to do that is by changing your behavior. So you convince yourself that I can do this. If I just love him more, if I just prove to him I'm not the person he says I am, then maybe he'll stop that violence. It's a really screwed up logic, but you also are terrified of them. Yeah. You're frightened because you have had threats that if you leave, and you're made to feel guilty. If you leave me, I'll kill myself. It's a very complex. It's not something that you can just say, I didn't leave because of this. It becomes very, very complex, and it very much comes down to the fact you've been stripped of all self-esteem, and you've lost the ability to have the courage to walk away by that point.
Yeah, it's very sad, Vivian. You did stay together. You eventually got married. You had a baby. Is it at that point that you decided to leave?
Well, I mean, you sort of then think, oh, maybe when the baby comes, it's all going to get better. It's just so screwed up. I understand that. Yes, it suddenly... I had two moments of real clarity. One was when I started to get help and support, because I started to think, this is not me. This is not... I do deserve more. And I got help and... sorry, this is a long answer. The most liberating moment in my life, actually, was when I learnt that actually I can't change him. I can't change that situation. But what I do have control of was me. And I learnt that it was about my low self-esteem, and I could do something about that. And that was really quite powerful for me, because I thought, oh, okay, it was a relief. I couldn't change the rest of my life, because by then it was totally unmanageable. But being able to start with me was something that was quite manageable. And I thought, okay, and when I did get help for that and started to build that self-esteem, I then started to have that realization, well, A, I don't have the right to change him. If you actually love somebody unconditionally, then you love them for who they are. And I had to just say, you know, if he never changes, ever, is this somebody that I actually like and respect and want to be with? Just take love out of the equation, because it was clearly an unhealthy form of love. But was that somebody that I could accept unconditionally and be with and look back at my life and not regret it? And I thought, no, you know, I'm there hoping and waiting for him to change. And that's actually not unconditional love. So for me to unconditionally love him, I had to just say, okay, if that's the way he wants to be, he wants to stay like that and not change himself, well, then I have to accept that. And then the second, and therefore that's not good enough for me, and therefore I need to leave. And then the other moment of clarity was, of course, it's not about me now. I'm a mother. And I cannot bring my child up in that environment, because I started to realise that, you know, if I didn't, then it would pass down, and I had to break that cycle.
Yeah.
Because it is a cycle of violence, and you have to break that. Otherwise, I'd be bringing up a boy who would become a violent man. You know, the chances of that very high.
How did you leave? Did you just... surely he didn't just let you walk out with the baby.
I tried many, many times, and on average, women... I'm saying, I'm using the word women, but, you know, I do acknowledge that there are men
who
do get abused by women. But the statistics talk about women, because they are the majority. On average, it takes 7 times to leave. And definitely, I left, went back, left, went back, left, went back, left, went back. Because every time you leave, you know, that remorse and all that comes back and they sucker you back in. But I had to do a moonlight flit. I had to... because I also learned that the most dangerous time, and I think it's something like 70% of those who are killed by their partners or ex-partners happens when they're in the process of leaving. So I had to just go when he was at work one night, and I just... I left. I just packed whatever I could into the car. A girlfriend came over, and I just left. And I left with whatever I could fit in, and my baby. And I couldn't tell him where I was going, because I was very fearful that, because he'd threatened that if you leave, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
So that was the only way I could do it. And I also didn't leave. I had a lot of support. I went to a support group called Al-Anon, which is for wives and families of alcoholics, because addictions often go hand in hand with these sort of relationships. And they were incredibly supportive. And so, yeah, I then would, you know, go to that support group and have counselling, and just, you can't do it alone. You need that support as well.
And you then left, and because of the topic we're talking about, addicted to abusive men, you then met somebody else who was very similar.
No, I didn't.
Excellent. No, good for you. Good for you.
No, I knew, and actually the process that I thought that leaving was going to be the hardest thing. Actually, the withdrawal from that sort of relationship was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And the will to go back, the pull to go back, was so, so strong. I mean, he tried to kill himself, and the guilt I felt, and the, you know, wanting to go back and say it's okay and wrap my arms around him, and it was just, it was incredible. And it was very, very hard not to go back. And so I had to go cold turkey like a drug addict, and I really do equate it to addiction. Because I just wanted to go back, because it sounds screwy, but, you know, it hurts so much when you leave, and the only thing that can make you feel good again is for them to tell you, I do love you, I'm sorry I hurt you. And so the very thing that hurts you is the thing you also need to make you feel good again. So it's like a drug.
Yeah.
And I had to go cold turkey, and it took me a long time to really work on myself and look at, you know, why was I attracted to somebody like that? Why did I stay? Because I knew that, and this is not to victim blame. Some people say, oh, you're just victim blaming and saying, you know, we deserve, you know, we're to blame for it. I'm not saying I'm to blame for it. But if I didn't go look at the roots of why I was attracted, why I stayed when the warning signs were there, when I know that other women wouldn't have and they would have run a mile, then I would have gone straight into the next relationship like that, or I would have gone back to him.
Yeah.
So I had to break that cycle within me, and by taking that responsibility for my own life and looking at very, very hard at myself, again, it wasn't to victim blame, but it was to basically say, this is my way out. This is my way to change my mindset from one of being a victim to being a survivor. And I did that, and I did that, and I stayed on my own. And then eventually I met my husband, who I'm with now, nearly 30 years later, who is the most emotionally available, beautiful, wonderful man, and is my best friend. And
lovely.
Yeah.
I'm really,
yeah,
really,
I mean,
pleased.
It really, it's, I've had a very, very happy ending.
Good. Well, you are living proof.
Honestly, I only say that because I worked on myself, and I actually tried very hard at the beginning to push him away. I wasn't used to someone who was emotionally available.
Mm.
So I really did. I tried to sabotage it. I found it very difficult, you know.
Well, you are proof that there is life after abuse, and I know that you want to help others. So you're currently telling your story in a book, Unbeatable, How I Left a Violent Man, and apparently people can follow your blog as well. What is the address?
Yes. It's www.beingunbeatable.com.
And then you've
because
also...
Because I like to say I'm unbeatable, and it's about... It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be someone in a domestic violence relationship. It's just about being strong, fearless and successful, and how you can absolutely turn your life around no matter what trauma you've been through.
And if you were to give a tip to any of our listeners that probably are going through a similar sort of story, would you suggest getting in touch with a support group?
I think absolutely support groups. There are many, many out there, and they are free because a lot of people financially can't afford counselling. So, you know, I would absolutely say the domestic violence hotlines and the domestic violence resources in most countries are very good these days, a lot better than they were when I was going through it. And they can point you to all of these services that are free. I would absolutely say that, because I don't think you can do it on your own.
Okay, well, it was a compelling story and you told it beautifully. Vivian McGrath, thank you very much for being on the show. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk Radio Europe.